I'll talk today about Coulomb Dynamics in the half-field Landau level, and of course, it's a theory closely related to the experiment by Mike Lilly and Jim Eisenstein. And that's a work I've done with Ido Sishkin, who is doing his PhD with me at Weizmann. My outline is the following. I'll start with very briefly reviewing the experimental observations since we've heard about them from Jim. And then I'll have two parts to the talk. The first will be a weak coupling calculation of Coulomb Dirac 1/2, which will turn out to be capable to explain why Dirac 1/2 is so much enhanced compared to the zero magnetic field by a factor of 1,000 to 10,000, as you may remember from Jill's talk, and then why it is not by any means quadratic. So that will be the first part of the talk, and it's related, as Jim mentioned, to works of Kim, Illis, and Saki. The last part, I'll talk about strong coupling calculation, which is aimed at addressing this very low temperature non-disappearance of Coulomb Dirac 1/2, and I'll look at the possibility that this behavior very close to zero temperature results from fluctuations of pairing between composite fermion states. And actually, there's a related work by Kun Yang that invokes a different mechanism, and I would like also to, if I have time, to separate the two mechanisms and suggest a way to an experimental way to distinguish between the two. So the summary of the experiment is really going to be very short. You know what Coulomb Dirac is. You push a current in one layer, you don't push a current in the other layer, but you do measure the voltage at the other layer, and the ratio of the voltage here to the current here is the Dirac resistivity. And what is found when you do the experiment at nu equals 1/2 is that I understand it's a very easy experiment, at least relative to a zero magnetic field. So you find a very strong Coulomb Dirac. You find that it is definitely non-quadratic, and it goes like the temperature to some power alpha, and alpha is smaller than 2, so it's subquadratic. And that holds as long as you don't get too close to zero temperature. At very low temperature, what you find is a saturation. You find a non-monotonous behavior, as you may remember, in which Dirac even seems at this special point seems to diverge as you approach the zero temperature limit. Now, one thing I would like to emphasize is that as much as the Dirac is very strong, and as much as it has all this peculiar low temperature behavior, it is still a small effect, meaning the Dirac resistivity is always, in this experiment, much smaller than the longitudinal resistivity inside each layer. So we have some small parameter, if you will, to describe this experiment. Now, I'd like to start with the weak coupling calculation. And the physics of a weak coupling is very simple. Basically, you have electrons flowing in this layer, and they interact with electrons at the lower layer. Now, if the density of the electrons at the lower layer was uniform, there would be no scattering, because it would just compensate the positive background. But this density is not uniform. It fluctuates thermally. There are thermal fluctuations of the density in that layer, and those electrons scatter off these thermal fluctuations. Now, how much thermal fluctuation there are here? That's, of course, given by the fluctuation dissipation theorem, and we know that it's proportional to the imaginary part of some response function times the thermal factor. And it's, of course, very easy to translate the density fluctuations in this layer to potential fluctuations by just multiplying it by the potential between the two layers. And this way we find out how strong are the potential fluctuations these electrons scatter onto when they flow in the active layer. Now, of course, electrons in that layer also scatter off density fluctuations in the upper layer. So there's a momentum flowing from the upper layer to the lower, from the lower to the upper, and we should have a balance equation which subtracts the rate of momentum transfer from one layer to the other minus the opposite direction. So altogether we get that the drag voltage is the rate of momentum transfer from the active to the passive minus the opposite, and it boils down to this equation, which was first developed by all these people I quoted in the previous transparency, and which I would like to have a look at. So the drag voltage is proportional to the current, and it is proportional to this integral over Q and omega, over the momentum transfer Q and frequency or energy transfer omega. And now what you have here is a derivative of this thermal factor, and this derivative comes out of the fact that you have to subtract two momentum transfers. And then what you have here is the screened interaction between the two layers squared, because it's basically a golden rule calculation, so it's the potential squared, multiplied by the imaginary part of the density-density response function of each of the two layers. Now, to translate this into plain English, the imaginary part of a density-density response function is something that is non-zero whenever there is an excitation mode at that particular Q and omega. So this integral has this integrand has a non-zero value whenever you have an excitation mode, it has a non-zero value at the values of Q and omega at which you have an excitation mode in both systems. And the systems exchange quanta of the excitation mode, and that exchange leads to the momentum flow from the active layer to the passive one. So now the point is this. If we want to find out what is the drag resistivity for a particular problem, zero magnetic field, filling factor 1.5, or whatever problem we look at, we need to know what is the density-density response function of the system we look at, and we need to know what is the screened potential. And that is what we should look at for nu equals 1.5. What is the screen potential between the two layers and what is the density-density response? To put it differently, what is the dynamics of these density fluctuations, the thermal density fluctuations that give rise to the scattering between the layers? So the screen potential, of course, is just the Coulomb potential divided by the dielectric constant. And that's still general. I'm getting to the point where I'll discuss the particular nu equals 1.5 case. But first, the screen potential is proportional to 1 over the dielectric constant, and the dielectric constant, of course, is 1 plus some factor in which the two important ingredients are the Coulomb interaction between the layers and the conductivity. So to know what is the screen potential, or what are the important values of momentum exchange and energy exchange that will dominate the drag, you need to know what is the Coulomb interaction between the two layers and what is the conductivity. And those are the two things I'd like to comment on now. So first of all, what is the Coulomb potential? That's the easier thing. So the Coulomb potential, if you have just a single layer, that goes, of course, like 1 over Q because we're in two dimensions. But if we have a double layer, in fact, it turns out the Coulomb potential is not as singular. It doesn't go as 1 over Q. And this is because the density fluctuations we consider in a double-layer system can be decomposed into symmetric and anti-symmetric components, and the anti-symmetric component, the density fluctuation which is anti-symmetric between the two layers, is basically a density fluctuation of dipoles. A dipole, this direction here and this direction here, the opposite direction there, and so on. And the interaction between dipoles is weaker in terms of its Q dependence. It has one less power of Q in the denominator. Now, why is this important? Because the weaker is the Coulomb interaction between the Coulomb interaction between these electrons forming the charge fluctuations, the weaker is the Coulomb interaction, the slower it is going to the slower the relaxation of that fluctuation is going to be. Because the reason these fluctuations relax is that once you have a density fluctuation, the electrons create an electric field. The electric field drives the current, and the current leads to a decay. So this decay is described by this dielectric constant. So the dielectric function. So the weaker are the electric fields, the slower is the decay, and the slower is the decay, the more drag we'll have, because density fluctuations will stay for longer and longer time, and that will enhance the drag. So it will enhance the scattering of the electrons of this fluctuation. So the anti-symmetric fluctuations are the ones with the slowest relaxation. And now what I'd like to talk about is the conductivity. And the unique feature of the Newcastle 1/2 state, maybe the unique feature, the most important one coming out of all the experimental observations, particularly those of Bob Willett of surface acoustic waves, is that the conductivity as a function of Q and omega for very small Qs and omegas in a particular order of limit is proportional to Q. This is a unique behavior. I'm not aware of any other system in which you can see something like that. And as a consequence of that, first of all, you see that at very long wavelength, the conductivity is very, very small. Now, that's, of course, to be expected. If you look at the system in a very strong magnetic field, the longitudinal conductivity is very, very small. Most of the conductivity is whole, and it doesn't contribute to relaxation of density fluctuations. The longitudinal conductivity is small, and it is linear in Q. So as a consequence of that, the dispersion mode for density relaxation is I omega going like Q cubed, which is, of course, a very... an extremely slow relaxation rate. You know that diffusion gives you I omega going like Q square. This is an ultra slow diffusion. And that dispersion law that was one of the main findings of the Halperin Lyrid work several years ago. And that is the essence of both the huge enhancement of drag at 1/2 and the particular temperature dependence. Because once you realize that the dielectric constant describes a dispersion of density relaxation which goes by this law, I omega going like Q cube, you find that, and you use the weak coupling formalism I described before, you find that the dominant energy and momentum exchange that leads to drag goes along that line, meaning along the line of Q going like omega to the power 1/3, and is dominated by a value of the momentum which is temperature dependent. This is in contrast to what happens at zero magnetic field, where the dominant momentum exchange is just the largest one allowed by the Coulomb interaction, which is 1 over the distance between layers. So you are dominated by a very slow and very long wavelength and very slowly relaxing density fluctuations, and this slowness of the relaxation is what leads to a very strong enhancement and to a particular temperature dependence, which is T to the power 4/3. So that's the weak coupling calculation, and as you saw, we calculated the drag resistivity, including prefactors and so on, and that transparency you already saw in the last talk by Jim. And what I'd like only to say is that our weak coupling calculation falls short of the experimental result by about a factor between 2 and 4, and you can argue depending on parameters and so on. But one thing which it does manage to do, and which I think is very important, is that it does manage to explain the huge enhancement. So the when you compare drag at 1/2 to drag at zero magnetic field, there's a factor of between 1,000 and 10,000 enhancement. We explain about 1/3 of that enhancement, which is at least a qualitative explanation. In fact, I think that the remaining discrepancy might be related to a discrepancy which one also has in understanding surface acoustic waves measurements, and to a certain fudge factor that one needs to use also for understanding SAW. Okay, now, how much time do I have? As much as I need. Okay, thanks. So 10 more minutes, okay. So in the remaining 15 instead. in the remaining time, I'd like to try and discuss a possible mechanism for explaining what happens at very low temperatures. Now, clearly, a drag that does not vanish at zero temperature cannot result out of some scattering mechanism, because a simple scattering bearing all kinds of pathologies which I don't think are taking place here, simple scattering always vanishes at zero temperature by the famous Landau arguments of phase space. So to understand a divergence of drag at zero temperature or a finite value of it, it seems that we need to invoke some kind of a correlation. And in that context, it is important to go back to an idea by Bornstein, McDonald, and Chetan Nayak, who pointed out to the possibility that there might be an instability of the two nu equals 1/2 layers towards Cooper pairing. Now, for such an instability, you need an attractive interaction. And how do you find such an attractive interaction? Well, here's the diagram involved in that, and here's some cartoon. I have to explain it, and let me try both on you. First of all, the starting point for that description is two isolated nu equals 1/2 state. By that I mean that the Chern-Simons transformation that attaches flux cubes to electrons is an interlayer Chern-Simons transformation. So each electron gets two flux quanta and interacts only with the flux quanta of the other electron in its layer. There is no interlayer Chern-Simons interaction. But there is, of course, a Coulomb interaction, and there is therefore, when you look at the Drest interaction, there is a Drest interlayer interaction, which is a current-current interaction, which has roughly the following structure. It starts as a Chern-Simons interaction, which is intralayer, then there is an intralayer compressibility bubble, then there is an interlayer Skrinn-Coulomb interaction, and a mirror image of that at the other layer now here. Now, how do I understand the physics of that interaction, and why is it, and why does this line or this type of interaction give rise to attraction? The way I understand it is the following. Let's say that we have a composite fermion moving with a momentum k in one layer. Now, a composite fermion moving in one layer carries a current. And this is a whole system. So if there's a current moving in this direction, there's a gradient of the chemical potential in that direction. And now, the nu equals 1/2 state, as we heard several times this morning, is a compressible state. So if there is a gradient of the chemical potential in this direction, there is a density gradient in that direction. So this is my poor way of drawing a density gradient. There is a density gradient in that direction. Now, if the other layer has an opposite a composite fermion moving with an opposite momentum, then it's the same argument inverted. It moves this way, there's a gradient of the chemical potential that way, there's a gradient of the density because it is a compressible state that way, and you end up with the two composite fermions which are moving in opposite momenta having a density gradients correlated with them which are in opposite directions, and that's how I visualize the source of the attraction. Now, if you calculate simply this interaction, this component of the Drest interaction, you find that it's very highly singular. It goes like 1 over, like U over Q cubed plus I omega, and it has some temperature T naught here, which appeared already in the weak coupling calculation, which is very high temperature. But in any case, it's very, very strongly singular, and that forces you to be careful with the calculation. But anyway, when you go on and calculate a contribution of drag, maybe before I tell you about the calculation, let me say that this attraction hints that there might be a pairing instability. Now, what the experiment shows us is definitely not a paired state, because the experiment does not show Roitzex equals zero. A paired state in this context is a quantum Hall state. If composite fermions pair, they form simply a nu equals one interlayer quantized Hall state. This is definitely not what is seen in the experiment, because as I mentioned before, Roitzex is much louder than the drag resistivity. So what we might be seeing are fluctuations above the critical pairing temperature. And this is the possibility we looked at. So you have to calculate the contribution to drag coming out of Aslamazov-Larkin and Markey-Thompson type diagrams, in which you have one layer here and one layer here, and there's simply a repeated attractive interaction of the type I discussed before, and you have to sum over infinitely many of these. And what you find is that here the Aslamazov-Larkin contribution turns out to be larger, and as you may expect, it diverges at the critical temperature. So you find a mechanism for drag which not only does not vanish at zero temperature, but in fact diverges as you approach some critical temperature. Now you can try and calculate some mean field calculation of that critical temperature, and you get a result, and I'd like to put the result on a certain energy scale. So what are the energy scales in this problem? You know that nu equals 1/2 in principle for a single layer has just one energy scale, which is the interaction energy scale. Once you have a second layer, you have some more freedom, because there's a dimensionless parameter, which is the Fermi momentum, the square root of the density, times the interlayer distance. So that gives rise to three energy scales. One is this T naught I outlined before, which is way above 100 Kelvin, and which was relevant in the weak coupling calculation. Basically, if you take the weak coupling calculation at high temperatures, this is the temperature at which the drag resistivity will get to be H over E squared. Then there is the Fermi energy, which is much lower, which is of the order of 10 degrees. And then there is this energy, which is the one that comes out as the critical temperature. And it involves numerical factors which are very hard to calculate, but it is somewhere at a range which is not completely unsensible, meaning a 0.1 degree or so. But we can't really calculate it. Now, what I would like to say about this mechanism, getting very close to the end, what I would like to say about this mechanism is, first of all, that it is a very sensitive one. It is, since you want to have pairing between two Fermi surfaces in the two layers, you have to have the two Fermi surfaces match exactly. So it is a very sensitive mechanism, meaning that if you believe this mechanism and you go to the lab and you carry out this experiment Jim was telling us about, and you find this divergence as you approach very, very low temperatures, and you sit on at the lowest temperature, you know, somewhere up at this divergence, and then you turn on a potential difference between the two layers so that there's a density difference forming, that will suppress pairing. It suppresses pairing because the size of the density becomes slightly different, so the size of the Fermi surfaces at the two layers becomes different, so you lose the pairing. So that's a way to experimentally test this hypothesis. By sitting at one of these spots where there was a strong nonlinearity, going to the point where drag seems to diverge, and turning on a potential between the two layers. There are other ways to suppress this contribution, and this is by moving slightly away with the magnetic field. And as we saw, this points were very sensitive to moving with a magnetic field, and by pushing a current in one of the layers while keeping the other one still, that suppresses pairing because you take one Fermi surface and you move it relative to the other one, so you lose the condition for perfect matching. And that of course goes well with this non-linearity that Jim and Mike were observing. So you may think of the experiment as possibly coming out of pairing fluctuations which take place in various regions, various puddles in the sample, where nu1 and nu2, both filling factors of the two layers, are very close to 1/2. And as we understood from the experimental observations, this divergence of the increase of the drag as you reduce the temperature, that has to do a lot with disorder and a lot with mesoscopics, and that might be a result of coming out of puddles in which you have this particular condition satisfied. Finally, if you may look at this mechanism, you may ask the question of hole drag, meaning if I push the current in the first layer, am I going to get a hole voltage, at the other layer? Or is the other layer, or is the voltage I get at the other layer only a longitudinal one? If you carry out this calculation, you find a zero hole drag. In our mechanism, there is no hole drag, and that in contrast to a mechanism related to the 1-1-1 state suggested by Kun Yang not a long time ago, in which hole drag is basically the entire effect. So there is also an experimental way, meaning a measurement of hole drag, which might distinguish between the two mechanisms. One last comment about calculations of TC. It's mostly a comment of caution. In principle, we may carry out a calculation of TC, and as I showed you, we did. And in fact, Bonesteel and company did it even before us. In practice, I don't think this can be trusted because disorder has here a very strong effect on TC because the disorder in the two layers is very uncorrelated. So both disorder and other effects probably will push down any critical temperature you get to lower value. Okay, so to conclude, what I described was that Coulomb drag in the half-field Landau level, first of all, is very different from that of zero magnetic field. At zero magnetic field, the picture is a very simple Landau-like picture in which the momentum relaxation time between the two layers goes like the temperature squared, and therefore the drag resistivity goes like the temperature squared. At 1/2, it's very different. There's a very slow relaxation of density fluctuations, which is governed by this overdamped dispersion law, and that leads to a very large Coulomb drag, which goes like the temperature to the power 4/3. Forget this fight, will it? Simply 2. And then I didn't describe it here, but there are corrections to the T to the 4/3 of higher powers, and if there is a disorder, the 4/3 changes to T squared log T at very low temperatures. The strong coupling calculation we carried out suggests that interlayer fluctuations of composite fermion pairing may lead to a drag that diverges towards the critical temperature, and this mechanism is very sensitive to anything you may do, meaning density difference between the two layers, deviations from moving the magnetic field away from 1/2, and putting too strong a measurement current. Thank you very much. Yeah. The question was in what sense TC is meaningful when you have a magnetic field. I'm not sure I understand the question. It is the meaning of it is that that's the temperature below which this instability leads to a formation of pearls. So and as you know, if you are just at 1/2, you cancel the magnetic field by the Chern-Simons transformation. So.
Mm-hmm. So if you've got one puddle that's fluctuating in this way, you then change the relative density of two layers, that puddle might go turn on. But
right.
Another puddle might turn on.
That might be, but
we expect that rather than being some sharp peak in drag, say as a function of the average interlayer density difference, there might be some wildly fluctuating.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The comment was about the sensitivity of the pairing mechanism to density difference, and of course if what we see is dominated by puddles, then changing the density between the two layers might turn off one puddle and turn on another, so there would be fluctuations of the drag due to that. The issue of the sign change is difficult. So if you have a clean system, there's no question that the sign should be that of electron-electron. A sign change might... The only way I visualize such a sign change is by the current taking some crazy path in which when it gets into that puddle, it gets, you know, in the wrong direction. But I don't know to answer this question well. Of what McDonald and Vignale were discussing. Well, it is a pairing between the between two layers. If we're talking about the same McDonald's, the same Vignale, and the same walk, then they were looking at a pairing between electrons and holes, in which case the attraction is obvious. It's the Coulomb attraction. Yeah, right. In that sense, it's similar. Yeah.
I just want to make sure. Below DC, the state is not superconducting. It's a paired Hall state, right?
Right. Maybe I should have said it more clearly.
That's, I think, was the confusion.
No, so let me say it very clearly. A paired Hall state of the type, you know, many people were discussing before me, a paired Hall state is a quantum Hall state. There is no, it's not a superconducting.
That was a
so it's not a superconductor. It's a quantized Hall state, meaning a plateau at OXY and zero OXX. Yeah.
Yeah, but
there's
a problem.
Right. And what I'm saying is that we can't really calculate any real TC. You know, it's very difficult in any. How do you know? It's in no sense a superconductor, it is a quantized Hall state. But the result of composite fermion pairing is, you know, it's like a Pfaffian state. This is a quantum Hall state. That might be, but in any case, we look at the fluctuations. So those will still exist.
Well, I don't think it's that simple. You can certainly have phase transitions. It won't be a perfect. It won't be a quantum ball. It won't have rho xx equals zero, except down to zero temperature, perhaps. But it could still have. There could be phase transitions anyway.
It will have, if it's this constant valid transition, it will have a zero resistance below the KT transition.
No, but not to the true coefficient. It's funny.
Not for the symmetric one.
Yeah.
for the anti-Semitic part.
But in the case of the empirical state that all of the laws are God, for instance, unlike the one on Wednesday, which has got this law, so that still we have the face of each of the one on Wednesday. The other one is you have.
Right. Say that again, you don't
have. For the empirical state, that, I mean, it's a state that is fully God.
Mm-hmm.
And all the excitations, because the particles have some finite energy. So it will operate at finite temperature, whereas the one on Wednesday has coherence.
Yeah, but why should it why should it make a difference? I mean, if you take this mechanism and
it's
that.
Because it's not a mechanism, one case and not the other.
I'm not sure if there is one in our case or not. That's a question I can't answer.
So these are clearly different states.
No, the two states, the 1-1-1 state discussed by Steve and Allen and Young and Moon and various other people, that's a different state from the one I'm talking about, and I think the most clear difference is in this issue of cold drag. And the difference comes, basically, the origin of the difference is that we do a Chern-Simons transformation in which the vortices, the Chern-Simons flux tubes do not penetrate between the layers. The 1-1-1 state have them penetrate. Yeah. So it's a different starting point.
As far as I remember, Bones, Steele, and I'll never resolve the question of what happens below, what exactly the phase is below DC. I mean, they found instability, but there's still quite a number of different possibilities as to what it makes a transition to, depending on what it makes a transition to. It could be gap, it could not be gap.
But if it is gap, in principle,
it's gap.
Otherwise,